I'm Mark Bayshore. Thanks for joining us here on Tuesday. Much of Michigan is enjoying a very green summer thanks to abundant rain the past few months. Today, WKAR's Peter Wharf continues his focus on plants, this time plants native to Michigan. Peter recently spoke with MSU grad Bill Schneider, owner of Wild Type Native Plant Nursery in Mason. The two discuss plants native to our state, Bill's water conservation projects, and take a quick tour of the greenhouses.
What I think is interesting and maybe a little unfortunate is that our customers are only using a small percentage routinely of the plants we grow. So the majority of our plants that are sold make up a very small percentage of the species we offer.
What are some in that smaller, more popular group, the types that people buy mostly?
Well, in terms of prairie species, they're butterfly weed and some of the prairie grasses and other prairie wildflowers. In terms of shrubs, we sell a lot of shrub dogwoods and shrubs like nannyberry, oaks as it relates to trees, species along those lines.
Right, right. What are some of the more fun and unusual things, like the ones that you just mentioned?
Well, the more obscure species that we grow that are not as sought after as I would hope would be species like spikenard or death camas. It's hard to sell a plant that has a name like death camas.
Why is it beneficial to grow native plants, say, in a suburban garden or an in-town garden?
Well, there are many reasons. I think one of the most popularized and notable reasons is that they support pollinators and beneficial insects in places where there isn't a lot of flora to support them. And they also are supportive of the charismatic insects and animals we like to see. They support butterflies and hummingbirds and a variety of other animals. So if you want those kinds of things as part of your environment, and you should, even if you live in a highly urbanized area, you can bring them in and support them with native flora.
Right. I had a rare hummingbird sighting in my front yard about a week ago. What are some of the things that attract hummingbirds, that attract butterflies? Because I know I want those things.
Sure. There's a certain specific group of plants that attract hummingbirds, things like cardinal flower and columbine and a host of other very specific plants. As it relates to butterflies, the adult butterflies nectar on a variety of flowering plants. If you put a lot of flowering plants in your yard, native or non-native, you'll attract a lot of butterflies. Mm-hmm. But among our, what I would call sophisticated customers, is they're looking for the larval host. So if you want a specific butterfly, you have to have the plant where the immature part of that life cycle mm-hmm. is supported. That's the larva or the caterpillar.
Yeah.
They come here with a long list. They want to support mourning cloaks or American painted ladies or a whole variety of butterflies, of course, including monarchs. Mm-hmm. And each one has a specific larval host plant. Yeah. Or set of plants.
We've explored a few of the ideas about the plants that you have here. Talk to me about some of the specific other projects that you've been involved in, water conservation and those sorts of things.
A lot of interest in native flora has been focused on stormwater management. This is the invisible part of our built landscape. Very few people pay much attention to managing stormwater, but it's a very big and expensive part of suburbia and urbanized areas, as well in rural areas. So if you're going to create places to hold stormwater, those places have to have vegetation that can support periodic inundation. So we've worked on what are termed rain gardens all over the state, stormwater treatment projects all over, from drain commissioner projects to projects that involve shopping centers and apartment buildings, condominiums.
This is Peter Wharf for Current State. I'm talking with Bill Schneider in Mason, Michigan, graduate of Michigan State University. Where do you gather your seed?
We collect our seed from wild populations across the state. And we document those sources. The places we collect these plants is mostly private property, but some public land by permission. And we do this so that we maintain the genetic diversity found within the population. We're trying not to impose much selection on the plants we produce so that they have enough variability, genetic variability, to create and support sustainable populations.
Let's have a look then at where you're growing.
Sure.
Let's go. Okay, well, we've just left the front of the house, so to speak. Where are we now?
We're in the germ house. I'm going to turn the fans off. This space makes me happy. We germinate thousands, tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of seedlings at any given time here in this house. We've collected the seed in the summer and fall of the year before. We've treated the seed by putting it through a cold period so it is prepared to germinate when we put it into a warm environment. And what we're looking at here are hundreds of germination trays. Each tray has 512 cells, and we sow these trays in hopes that we get good germination.
It is this sort of black plastic flats like you would see at a garden store, but they're very small cells, almost like a honeycomb.
Very small, 512 cells in about a foot and a quarter square feet. So you can tell that they're very, very small. Mm-hmm. And then we germinate them. Sometimes we're very successful. Sometimes we are completely unsuccessful.
Really?
It's a lot of unpredictability.
Why is that?
Well, it could be that we had poor germination due to the quality of the seed we collected was not great. It could be that we could have had some fungal problems that destroyed the seedlings as they germinated. Maybe it wasn't, the seed didn't receive a long enough cold period in order to break the dormancy that's necessary. It's for a myriad of reasons, and we sometimes think we know why things don't germinate well, and sometimes we think we know why they do germinate well, and then you do it the next time just the same way and you get a different result. So we're continually humbled by this process because we're not always successful, and we can't always predict how things are going to turn out.
Bill Schneider at Wild Type in Mason, Michigan. Thanks again.
Thank you.
For Current State, this is Peter Whorf.